good afternoon to all of you listening today to Woods and Water, South Carolina, here on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer. I think I got all that right. Goodness gracious, this heat wave just keeps going. I mean, it is there for a while. And, man, that's all we can do to get through it. So, but hey, what it does is it means you need to stay indoors and plan now what you're going to do when fall gets here, which is, you know, a pretty good excuse if you're looking for an excuse to stay inside. Okay, officially, I'm against Pokemon Go. That's the official Woods and Water statement. I am done with it. When it first came out, I had a lot of friends who were saying, oh, man, it's a great thing. It's kids are outdoors. They're, you know, going here. And I have a hard time coming out against kids being outdoors and fresh air and exercise and stuff like that. But I think two things. The people that put this out there should have thought a little better and not put Pokemon in national cemeteries. And I mean, if you really want to make this a good thing, it should have chosen more carefully where they're going to put these things. It also, things like this always bring out the idiots, I guess you'd say. I shouldn't say that word. And it brings out the people who don't think things through, such as people who leave their cars in the middle of intersections to go chase Pokemons. And I even saw a sign on a business the other day that said, if you leave this premises, for crying out loud, if you leave this building in order to catch a Pokemon, you will be terminated. I am ashamed for the entire human race for even having to write this note. I think if you have to rely on technology to get your kids outdoors, then we as parents are not making a good enough effort to make the outdoors fun. That makes sense. Anyway, got a good show today. Started off real quick, so hang on and enjoy. You know, a lot of conservation starts at the state level, at the chapter level for national organizations, and I love having them on. Ashley Clark has been on this show before with the Greenville chapter of Ducks Unlimited. Ashley, how are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me on.
Anytime. Like I said, your conservation starts at home, and with local chapters, that's where we need to do a lot of our focusing and fundraising and all. And you got a pretty different one. You know, you always have banquets and all, and y'all are doing something a little different. So you had your spring banquet. How did that go?
It was great. We had it on April 29th at the TD Convention Center and had a really successful event, raised a lot of money for the Ducks.
I gotcha. And the Ducks need it. Boy, this heat's something else for them, isn't it?
Yes, we need a good duck season.
We need a good duck. I wouldn't be too upset if I woke up tomorrow morning and it was like January the 9th.
My husband would agree completely.
There you go. But y'all are changing it up. You said you had your spring dinner. Instead of doing a fall dinner, you're doing something different, and I think it's a great one, especially in September when dove season is here. Duck season is just around the corner. So what are you doing with the Greenville chapter of Ducks Unlimited?
Yes. So instead of two sit-down traditional banquets in the fall on Friday, September 9th, we are going to have a sporting clay shoot at the Clinton House. And it will be an all-day event. Registration opens at 9:30. We'll have a barbecue lunch catered, and then the guys and gals will be able to shoot in the afternoon.
Okay.
It's a really good all-inclusive package. We have three different levels of teams, but included with the teams is also ammunition, lunch, the cocktail afterwards, hour afterwards. We'll have oysters, a low country boil, drinks, ammunition, lots of events, souvenirs, of course your DU membership and the typical things that go along with that. So okay. It's not just the shooting, but you just show up and we'll have golf carts and your meals and everything for you.
And that's, you got a Black Duck sponsor, Drake sponsor, Green Wing sponsor, and you got, and if you don't want to sponsor a team, you got other ones which is kind of neat. You can sponsor lunch, the happy hour, warm up sponsor, Clay's cart sponsor. I mean, and I guess these sponsors, what they're looking for is they're looking for the name recognition.
Yes, absolutely. To be represented at the event, but if you're not interested in shooting, you can still be supportive and have a presence at the event.
I know Mike had one of those low country bulls back a couple months ago, had a little just an impromptu shoot and did the Low Country Boil, and I took my daughter and we ate well.
Cool, yeah. It should be a really good, fun time. It's also the Friday before the first home Clemson football game on Saturday.
Uh-oh.
So we're hoping a lot of people will make it a total weekend package.
Yeah. Well, how do they, if somebody's listening out there and wants to get involved, how do they contact you, or how do they get a hold of the chapter to sponsor something, one of these events?
What they can do is they can send me an email.
Okay.
Did I give you my email address? It's oclark, C-L-A-R-K, 9956
okay.
at gmail.com.
Okay, can you give it to me one more time? Can you give it to me
yes.
one more time?
A as in Ashley.
Okay.
Clark, C-L-A-R-K, 9956 at gmail, G as in Greenville,
okay.
.com.
All right.
Or they can go right online to ducks.org/South Carolina. That's the Ducks Unlimited national website. It will direct them to the South Carolina site, and you can purchase any of these, your team, the sponsors, mulligans, online.
Very good.
And if anyone has questions, they can contact me via email, and I can help them through that as well.
Very good. Well, I hope it's a good event. Gosh, my fall is just so crowded. I hate to say I'd be there, but I might drop in just to see what's going on.
Outstanding. We'd love to have you. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. And anytime y'all have stuff going on, don't hesitate to give me a call.
We will. Thanks, Roger.
All right. Thanks, Ashley.
WGTK, The Answer. This new radio station is the one station that truly gets the upstate. We know Greenville like the back of our hand. We know Spartanburg and what makes it tick. We know Anderson, why it's so special. If you live there, you know it too. And most places in between. We're proud of where we live. Proud of what we've accomplished to make this place special. But most of all, proud of the people that call this place home. The best people and the best neighbors in the world are right here. And most of them are listening to us. 94.5 WGTK. The Answer.
Well, it's kind of the wrap up the FLW season. We're a couple days away from the FLW Cup out on Wheeler Lake in Huntsville, Alabama. And it wouldn't, almost didn't think I was going this year because all my guys from South Carolina had bad tournaments or whatever, but Brandon Cobb saved me. Brandon's on the show with me. Thanks for giving me a trip to Huntsville, Alabama, Brandon.
You're welcome. it was a close one, but at least I got the ticket out there.
And I'm sure you're probably a little more excited than I am.
Yeah, I am. I'm ready to get out there. I think it'll be my style of tournament, and I'm ready to go give it a whirl.
I hear you. We talked a little bit about it, about practice and all. I think we'll pick that up towards the end of the segment, but we talked middle of the season. I think I'd followed you guys down to Texas for the Toyota Bass Classic, and we talked after that, but you still had part of the season to go. How was the rest of the season for you?
That's right. Yeah, the summertime tournaments we had, I believe I had two left after we talked. We had Kentucky Lake, which was wedge fishing, and up north catching smallmouth on Champlain.
Yeah.
And I finished, I think, in Kentucky, I think I was about 4 ounces from a check. So that one was pretty rough. But then I didn't finish about middle of the pack also in Champlain, which was that kind of the type of year it was for me. I never did real horrible, but I was kind of a middle of the pack type of year, which wasn't great, but it made me the cup. So that's what you want. As long as you qualify for the cup, that's what you're shooting for.
And that's exactly what you said when we talked last time. You know, if I can just finish not horrible and not really great, I'll make the cut, and that's what you did.
That's right. Yeah, it would have been nice to get on up there in the check set one or two more times, you know. It was definitely a little bit of a learning year for me too. I think we talked about going to Champlain.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I've actually ever fished for smallmouth.
Oh wow!
I've caught a couple smallmouths around here. You know, we got Joe Cassidy with a few smallmouths in it, and I've caught some of the other lakes, but never went and targeted smallmouth. I weighed in all smallmouth every day up there. And if you've never been up there to fish, it's pretty unreal.
Okay, now this is the problem y'all create for me. You know, Anthony was on last weekend, and, you know, one of his favorite things, he's got two, he's building rods, two smallmouth fish with now. And he's like, oh, man, you need to go up there. And here you are telling him the same thing. I guess I'm just going to have to go one day.
Yeah, I think you will, because it's, I had never done it, and everybody talked about how unreal it was. But, I mean, I was catching 60 to 80 fish a day.
Wow.
And they just, a lot of them are the same size sure. fish, and that's why I didn't do so hot, because I was, the fish I was catching were about a quarter pound a piece, a little too small.
Okay.
it was still really fun. I mean, I guess that lake that is frozen so much of the year, the fish are just, they bite like crazy when they can.
Now, how are you catching them when you're up there? I mean, I hear a lot of people using tube baits or small crank baits or football jigs. I mean, how do you fish for them?
This time when I was up there, I was catching postbone fish, which okay. I think that's a little bit where I messed up. A lot of people were bed fishing, sight fishing. Those fish weighed a little more because they hadn't spawned out yet.
Okay.
And I was catching the postbone fish, and I was throwing like a Yozuri 3DB pencil, which is like a walking bait.
Okay.
And it's like a topwater walking bait.
Okay.
It's actually unreal. I mean, the smallmouth, I was just going across big flats with that bait, and just it'd fly out the water on top of it. Two or three would miss it before they'd get it. It was real fun fishing.
Oh, man. Everybody out there listening right now is going, yeah, we're going up to the north to fish smallmouth one day.
That's right. And it's really fun catching them, but it's really nerve-wracking in a tournament, because I don't know if you ever watched smallmouth fishing on TV or whatever. They do jump like it shows when you hook them.
Do they?
Like everybody always talks about how much they jump, and they do. When you hook them on topwater especially,
yeah,
it's nerve-wracking. It seems like they're eye level when they jump. When you're fighting.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sure they're not that high. It just feels like it.
That'd be fun if you're just up there fun fishing, but I can only imagine in money on the line, you're thinking slacking the line, they're going to throw that bait, and I'm going to be out of fish.
That's right. And I actually was very fortunate. I didn't hardly lose any fish, but it was still nerve-wracking.
Yeah, you look at those tournament weights, and they're all like ounces away. I mean, you'd have three or four people within an ounce of each other. It's stacked up smallmouth lakes.
Yeah, it's unreal. The fish, it seemed like a lot of the fish are actually like the same length, kind of, like the same size fish, but it depends on if you're catching a little thicker, fatter fish okay. that fed up after they spawn or
right.
pre-spawn fish. Because, like, the same fish I caught a month before when they've still been fat would have probably been that 17, 18 pounds.
I got you.
But they were just all 2 3/4 to 3 pound fish when I was there.
Oh, man. When are we going? I need somebody to go with me.
Whenever you want to go, we'll do it.
Sounds like fun. You and I both just got back from ICAST. Is that your first year down there, or have you been before?
That was actually my first time ever getting to go down there, and it was an unreal experience.
Hey, you walk in and you're just kind of like, where do I start? Of course, you went down there with Yozuri and some of your other sponsors, so you kind of had commitments to do. But
that's right.
You kind of look at that floor and you go, wow, where do I even start?
That's it. I think I was there about 2 days, and I think in 2 days I might have seen a third of the show.
Yeah.
Which I was working booths a lot of times, helping P-Line and Yozuri and Falcon. So it was a good experience for sure.
Yeah, it would be. Speaking of Yozuri, and you did a little video for me when I was down there, and I appreciated you doing that. Probably not what most people would expect you to pull out and say is one of your favorite baits, but tell us about that little crankbait.
Yeah, that's right. That's actually, anybody from South Carolina knows it from a long time ago. Yozuri made it, they discontinued it and they brought it back last year.
Okay.
And it's the hardcore shad. And a lot of people around here probably know it as the hill killer.
Okay.
And that's why when it was out 5-6 years ago, it was it worked so well on Clark's Hill that people started calling it the hill killer.
Okay.
It's just it's a small crankbait. It's actually a huge thing in the spring and fall around our area.
Okay.
I mean, Lake Greenwood, Hartwell, our lakes is shallow water cranking.
Huh.
And that's that Yozuri hardcore shad is essentially that's about the only crankbait I throw in cold water anymore, because it has the action like a shad wrap.
Okay.
But it casts so much better.
Because that weight transfer
is probably
system.
That's right. It's got the weight transfer, magnetic weight transfer in it, and you can throw it so much farther. It's a shad wrap's like the staple shallow water cranking bait around here in the in cold water. And that used to be my go-to bait, but they, that crankbait just casts so much better, and it has a lot tighter action. It's one of my favorites now for that cold water.
And you throwing that off a spinning reel or a bait caster?
I do. They make two sizes, or they actually make three sizes, but I throw the middle and larger size. And it the middle size, I throw on a spin rod. You don't have to.
Okay.
But I feel like I have a little more control with it, and I'd actually rather fight fish on that lighter 8-pound, 6-pound test on a spinning rod. And then the larger one I'll throw on a bait cast with, like, a 7-foot medium action kind of flimsier rod.
Okay.
Definitely in the spring and fall. You got to wait till the water gets down. Usually, once it's down around 55 and maybe a little cooler, that's when it really shines.
Okay. What color?
It's kind of, I keep it really simple. If it's the fall, they're usually, for the most part, feeding on shad, you know, because the shad are running in the creek and everything.
All right.
So a shad color in the fall, and if it's the spring, I throw a crawl or a brown or a red color.
Okay. Well, there you go, folks. That is your Brandon Cobb pro tip for cold weather South Carolina, or cool weather South Carolina fishing.
That's right. And it really works everywhere in the country. Just for some reason, our general Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina area, that shallow water cranking is awesome around here. It plays in other parts of the country, but around here, it's definite the way we win tournaments in the spring and fall.
Gotcha. Wow. Well, you actually made it out to Wheeler for a couple of days before I cast, and we talked a little bit about that. I don't know if you want to talk about your practice or if you just want to talk about the cup. I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, well, I made it out there for about 3.5 days or so. I've never seen Wheeler. It's kind of odd that I've never been there because I've been to Gunnersville a whole bunch, Pickwick, Wilson, been to every lake on each side of the dams, but I've never been to Wheeler.
Okay.
And I kind of expect it to be a lot like those other lakes, and it actually lays out a lot different than Pickwick or Gunnersville. It's it's a Tennessee River lake, so I think we talked about that last time with the ledges and everything.
Right.
So it has ledges, but the Wheeler ledges are a lot shallower, so you can't idle them like you would. I talked to you about Kentucky Lake. You just idle for days
while
schools of fish.
Yeah.
Well, those ledges on Kentucky Lake are like 12 foot deep on top, and that's where the fish like to sit. Well, on Wheeler, the ledges are like 3 foot deep on top, so you're not going to idle and not fish in 3 foot.
Mm-mm.
So if you want to fish ledges out there, it's more of just a fishing. You just pull up on a ledge and fish down it, which I'm kind of too impatient for that. I'm a shallow water type fisherman, run down the bank and cover water. So it has some good shallow water on it, but it's few and far between areas that lay out right for shallow water fishing.
Okay.
But my pre-practice, it was definitely a little tough, which I didn't fish a lot. I didn't catch that many fish out there. It's hot. I mean, it's going to be a tough tournament. But it's just like Wachita last year. I mean, it was a tough tournament. If you caught a limit, you were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, I think Wheeler will be a lot like that, which Wheeler's got some big fish in it. I mean, somebody will probably run into one of those deep type places where you might can catch a big bag all 4 days, off one place.
Okay.
But I don't see it being a slugfest by any means. It'll be a kind of grinded out, and I'm probably going to stick with the shallow water because it seems like that finding that offshore type place in that 4 foot of water is kind of needle in the haystack.
Right.
You literally got to fish down a ledge until you run into them.
Well, I mean, you fished shallow at Wachita last year and finished third.
That's right. And it is. I mean, in August is one of those months. I mean, generally on early summer type bite, you have to be deep. I mean, big schools of fish are out there deep.
Right.
And by August, those schools have kind of broke up. Same thing happens around here. I mean, the fish get real deep, bite real well in June, maybe early July.
Okay.
And then by late July, August, September, the water quality just gets so poor.
Yeah.
And those fish, they don't like to stay deep. They kind of come up shallow, but they scatter really, really bad.
Okay. All right.
So they go deep and then back shallow, but they're just not as easy catch as they are shallow in the spring.
Yeah. Well, you finished third last year. You think you can up the one or two spots this year?
I hope so. It would be real nice. It would definitely be hard to improve upon last year, but there's a little room for improvement. So. So the lake could lay out right for me. I just don't like it. It's a really big lake, and I don't like to make real long runs, and it looks like for the part of the lake that I like yeah. the way it lays out, it looks like it'll be anywhere from a 40 to a 70-mile run, depending on where I want to go.
So you're going to
have to get fuel and everything, so you lose a lot of fishing time.
So you're going to make me chase you, aren't you?
You might have to make a boat ride.
Okay.
There's a good chance that I won't be anywhere near the ramp. So.
Okay. Well, we'll have to get together because I am coming, and I will be chasing around watching, you know, so we'll have to figure out how to make sure I can find you.
That's right. I'm sure they can get you my location.
Yeah, they can.
You might have just stump jumping to get to me as well. I don't know. there's
great.
A bunch of shallow water way back in the river there. It looks real good.
Oh, gosh. Oh, well, you know, there's worse things I could be doing than riding around in a boat.
That's right.
Look, congratulations. You made Bassmaster Magazine's Best 30 Anglers Under 30.
I did. That's actually kind of a surprise to me. I got an email a couple months ago about some pictures, and I talked to you about using some of your pictures, and didn't really know anything about it. They didn't interview me or anything, and then somebody called me and said, "Man, you made the top 30 under 30. I was like, "What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?" And I saw it, so that's awesome.
That was great.
Just to clear it up, though, I'm 26, not 27. They did get the April.
But did they get your position right, 18th, or do you think you should have been ranked higher?
Right now, I'll take 18th. Okay. Hopefully, I'll move up some next year, but I'll take 18th for now.
Well, that was it's quite a thing for you to make that third year on the tour, and to be thought of that highly in the fishing community and to make the top 30, and that's pretty good. And I appreciate you calling and using those pictures. It was pretty cool to see those pictures in the on the website. I guess that'll come out in print in the magazine.
It may. I'm not sure exactly. It was kind of surprised to me too. So I'm not real sure if it will be in the magazine or not. But yeah, that I appreciate the pictures, and that was an awesome article for sure. It's an honor to be in it.
Yeah. Just worked out. That Texas trip worked out all the way around for all of us, didn't it?
It did. That was and there's some cool pictures out there of that crazy lake. So.
Yeah, that's a crazy lake. I hope the next one they do out there when y'all go back down to Texas be a little more open water.
Right. Unfortunately, I didn't qualify for it this year, but
yeah,
maybe I'll give it a whirl again next year.
There you go. Well, look, Brandon, a couple days we'll be leaving to go to Alabama. I look forward to catching up with you out there and on the water. And, man, you got the state of South Carolina behind you.
I appreciate it. Hopefully I can make them proud again this year.
I know you will, bud. You know, I fished the Lake Hartwell tournament as a co-angler this past year and had a ball. It was a lot of work that the normal guy doesn't see that goes on behind the scenes, and one of those work days was practice. And I was fortunate enough to practice with two of the best in the business, including the 2015 Forestwood Cup champion, Brad Knight. And Brad joins me on the show today, getting ready for the 2016 Cup. And Brad, how are you?
I'm doing great, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I look back on that day we spent on the water. Going into it, I was just petrified. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know. You know, I met you in 2014, and we talked a little bit, but, you know, you look at spending a whole day with somebody on a boat, and I'm sure you probably had some trepidation on your part. But, you know, at the end of the day, I still look back on that as one of the best days I've ever had on the water.
Well, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. That was a fun time for sure.
That was a great time. Well, look, take just a second to introduce yourself to my listeners, growing up and getting into fishing, and actually what you did before you got into fishing is pretty interesting to me, but just take a couple minutes and tell us who you are.
All right, my name is Brad Knight. I'm 34 years old. Fortunate enough last year to have won the Forestwood Cup Championship. I've been on the FIW Tour, I think this is my seventh year. I got started pretty much, I always fished around the house and farm ponds and stuff growing up, fishing on the banks of the lake. And once competitive sports in Little League and junior high and high school took all my time up. I never really fished much. Got to fish much beyond that level until high school was pretty much over with, and then I was kind of left with the competitive void. And a buddy of mine and I started fishing local 3-hour Wildcat tournaments on Thursday night, and basically just got the bug, and you know, we made some money that summer, and I thought, man, you know, I can make some money doing something I love. Why not keep going at it? And at the time, I was I've been working at a drugstore,
yeah,
a local small hometown pharmacy. I was, you know, working all good, and I was going to go to the pharmacy school. That was my plan. I was going to college, working at the pharmacy, and then fishing every chance I had. And that just kind of progressed on and on and on. And I started traveling as a co-angler, and it was the EverStart tour then.
Yeah,
with some guys. Started fishing the BFLs as a boater, qualified for the EverStarts. Fished the EverStarts, qualified for the tour. Just kind of worked my way up. That's all it was. Just dedicated my life to.
That and your family. And you got a great, Becky and Tinsley, just sweet, sweet two girls as you'd want to meet.
Absolutely. I'm very blessed to have the opportunity to travel with my family. We're full-time gig at this, and I travel, we stay in a fifth wheel camper.
Uh-huh.
I pull the camper and she pulls the boat. And that's what we do. Our daughter, she's four, and it's just we're just a bunch of gypsies, I guess. We're driving around the country chasing bass.
Well, there's worse things you could be doing.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
No, I tell you, you got to give it up to Becky for pulling the boat. I let my wife pull mine once, and that's the only time she'll ever pull it. And that was just an empty trailer, really.
Yeah, I don't know who was more nervous on that first trip, me or her.
Well, Deb tried to pull through the McDonald's drive-thru.
Oh, wow. That was a good way to get started.
Yeah, probably not a good way to start her off. But, we had a great day on Hartwell. And one of the things that, you know, we started out fishing all those marina docks and all, and you were throwing nothing but a spinning rod. And to a southerner, I guess to a South Carolina boy who, you know, I use my spinning rods out in the salt water. Tell us, because you told me you can do anything with a spinning rod, you can do with a bait caster.
Yeah, absolutely. Growing up in East Tennessee, I guess it's kind of a common thing, I guess, to use a spinning rod year round. We do a lot of like small, flat-sided balsa crankbaits. Small hobby crankbaits is kind of a big thing I grew up doing. And we cast all those with spinning rod. And I think at the time we were skipping little small swim baits way back up underneath docks and way back underneath pontoon boats and stuff in those marinas, and with the lightweight and the little big swim baits, I just use that spinning rod, a braid to a fluorocarbon leader. And, you know, that's just what I feel comfortable doing with the light bait. So I can be more of more efficient that way is what I'm looking for.
Okay. Well, it struck me as funny because most of the guys around here, you know, you go bass fishing and it's, you know, a rod box full of bait casters. And and you were just anything you picked up, it was a spinning rod, including the wake bait that you were throwing that morning.
Yeah, we were waking a bobber along, and that's something to do with a spinning rod too. And you can do that stuff with a bait caster, and I do on occasion.
Yeah.
I just don't have any real incessant need for it. I'm using light line and a light bait. To me, I'm going to be able to make more casts and more efficient casts with a spinning rod.
And I can see that. I do. You had a pretty good Hartwell tournament, didn't you?
Yeah, it was okay. I had a chance to had a couple of mishaps there that cost me making the cut. And maybe having a chance to make a run at that tournament, I really felt like I was on the right deal to win.
Yeah.
But you just got to capitalize. These guys are so good, and you're competing at such a high level. I mean, you don't fish flawlessly, it'll fall off cliff. But we still had a decent tournament. I think I fished, I don't know exactly the number, late 30s, high 40s.
Yeah.
Got paid and moved on to the next one. But, when I look back over the year, I definitely think Hartwell was the one where I left a lot on the table. I had a chance at like a 6-pounder that got me wrapped up under a dock and came off, and another group on the first day. That's what really, when you look back at the season, I had tournaments that I finished worse in.
Right.
But didn't bother me as bad as the Hartwell did, because you have opportunities you got to seize. You know, you just, one bite in the tournament can just carry you so far.
Right.
And make or break you. So I was fortunate to get paid, but really in that one, that was one of the ones that I felt like I was doing the right thing to have a chance to make that final day cut.
You know, we looked at a bunch of fish because the fish were starting to move shallow, and we spent a lot of time looking at fish on the beds and all. We spent a lot of time working docks and all. Did you? And there was that one dock the last day of practice we went to, and for what, 3 or 4 minutes, those fish were nailing that wacky worm and pulling and dropping it and picking it up again. Did you get to go back to that dock during the tournament?
Actually, that's what started. Story, Roger and I were just in this cove, and Hartwell's pretty notorious to have one doctor have a school of bass under him. And we found one of those magic docks that had a school of great big ones in it. We had a no hooks on a wacky arm. It was just tied straight to the O-ring, and we skip it in there, and they would bite your rod so hard, or bite your bait so hard your rod would jump. They would strip drag, and you'd have trouble hook on it. It was really crazy.
It was.
I started there and never caught one, of course, but this was a perfect tournament that you talk to people about how fast things change and making those adjustments on the water, because in practice, those fish were really, really biting good under the docks. The uh-huh. females were staged up under there before there was no shallow to spawn. A lot of the bucks and small males were up already on the bed.
Okay.
But from the transition to the last day of the tournament, and you saw this as well, we had some quality bites under the docks, saw several, caught several. That kind of just went away. I mean, and they really made a really strong push to the bank, and that's where a lot of those fish move. So a lot of the people got caught up chasing that dock pattern because it was so strong in practice.
Right.
And it really wasn't that effective at all during the tournament. Unless everybody caught them either sight fishing or skipping blindly to places where they were better that they couldn't see.
Right.
And that was pretty wild how fast that changed. Just in one day's time.
Yeah.
The whole strong pattern. The strongest pattern on the lake went to being the weakest pattern on the lake.
And you just said something there about skipping to places they just thought they might be. Thursday we fished south, kind of dock, just dock to dock to dock to dock with Braxton Setzer. And then Friday, my pro went north, up in a little bit of a muddy water scenario. I mean, it wasn't clear like it was down south, and that's what he was doing. He was just running these flat coves and just throwing a wacky worm or a Texas Relic Cinco, just to really nothing in particular. And he was catching some bigger females. And you're right, they moved that quick.
Yeah, it really happened fast. We had, I guess it was unseasonably warm weather that time of the year.
Yeah.
And the water was warming fast and things are happening fast. And they don't get asked a lot, what advice can I give somebody that's starting out tournament fishing or what can you? And that's one of the biggest things is just pay attention to the details and don't be afraid to make that move, because when one window closes, another one opens, and it happens so fast. That's one of the real advantages that a tour level guy has over some of the local guys that see the same thing, is we see how quick these things change and able to make a move pretty fast. So many different scenarios and so many, throughout the whole year. But it's just, it changes, hour to hour out there pretty much. So especially in the spring of the year, whenever we're wanting to spawn and the weather's happening, you got to be on your toes or you'll get left behind.
And that's one of the things that every guy I've ever talked to on your level, and I'll ask him, I said, that's got to be the hardest thing is knowing when to move. What I'm doing right here is not working. When do I say, okay, what's next? And as I still don't know how you guys make that decision.
Well, I wish I knew the magic answer to it. A lot of times I don't, but it's an instinct thing. And those were the David Bedleys and the Brian Thrifts. Those guys just have the sixth sense to make that happen.
Yeah.
I'm a little more hard-headed, and that's the hard thing to do. You have a practice where, you're catching 23, 24 pounds a day, skipping like you're on a swim bait underneath boat docks all 3 days of practice, and then you have your off day on Wednesday, and you're thinking, man, I'm fixing to go out and bust them on these docks. I can't wait to get out there.
Yeah.
In your first 3 hours of the tournament, you ain't had a bite on the dock.
Oh.
You're not sitting under dock. That's when you got to think, all right, things have changed. I got to go versus, well, I'll just keep fixing docks, and eventually I'll catch some. That's the difference between good and great.
The rest of the year, what was it like for you?
Very busy. It was. It's just been such a whirlwind of a year, from one tournament to the next. I think when you and I fished together at Hartwell, I hadn't been home in about a month. I actually have been going to one from after that tournament.
Yeah.
But it's been good. I've had a couple of decent tournaments, and I've had a couple that didn't go so good. But that's just part of fishing. I look back, and if I can have one or two tournaments where I have a legitimate chance to win, then I'll call it a success.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I try to define my seasons now. And, you know, I looking back, even though I finished low in some, I knew I was there to have a chance and was doing the right thing and maybe just didn't get a bite or two in the boat.
Yeah.
And that's just how it goes. You got to get the breaks. And if you get the breaks, you'll, you know, your ball bounces your way, you'll do good. And if not, you know, then you're not having any of the opportunities at all. That's what's frustrating.
Yeah. Well, we're headed to Huntsville, Alabama here very shortly. Defending cup champion. Have you had a chance to get over there at all?
No, I didn't. I don't, and I kind of stray from the norm on this. I'm not a big believer in pre-fishing tournaments. Yes, I can navigate the lakes.
Okay.
You know what I mean by that? I can go to Weir and I can run to the back of this pocket. I can run to, you know, I can fish anywhere I want to run to, but I have to hide on the lot.
Okay.
This is like a Red River that's like a big stump and fest swamp right. deal where you got to hide on 2 hours over here to get back in there. You know, run down the river and I, you know, I'm learning where I am. Those are valuable pre-fishing, not because you're trying to learn where the fish are, just navigational purposes.
Sure.
But I didn't go lure. I haven't pre-fished either of the cups I've been in. I don't know whether you would say that's a good or bad thing, but it's just what works for me. I just kind of feel like, you know, especially our cups in the past have been in the late part of August, so you're kind of in that change between summer and fall pattern, that in between funk. And things are kind of changing every day, and it's just sort of, I don't want to say a junk fishing tournament, but it's, you know, 50-50 whether you can go get out deep or shallow.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Wheeler's going to fall into that. I think you're still going to be into that late summer pattern.
Okay.
So kind of feel like I'm just going to go with the current conditions of what's happening instead of getting caught up on maybe 2 weeks ago.
You know, you sound like Casey Ashley in that respect, because I've talked to Casey a couple times, and he doesn't like to pre-fish months before he's going to be there, because he says you really get a false sense of what the fish are going to be doing.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't, you know, it gives you preconceived notions, if nothing else, and I don't do good with those. I like kind of getting, I get hard-headed.
Yeah.
That's a bad thing.
Well, that's good.
But I want to just kind of go get some fresh ideas on where the fish are sitting, if they're offshore, if they're going to be shallow or stuff, you know, finding some brush piles, that kind of stuff. That's probably what I'll spend my 3 days with.
I got you. Well, you got some great sponsors on board, and I try to let you guys have a chance to talk about them, because without them, you wouldn't be out there fishing, and you sure wouldn't be talking to me, and I probably wouldn't have a radio show. so it all works together, but Rigid Industries is a big one for you.
They are, yeah. They're my title sponsor for this year. Rigid Industries, LED lighting. They make everything. You see the big light bars on trucks.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest up to 54-inch radius bars. All the way down to accessory lighting for compartments, backup light kits for vehicles, that kind of stuff. So flashlights really make a lot of really, really cool stuff. It's all made in the USA, lifetime warranty stuff. So check them out on their website, rigidindustries.com. They've got something for everybody for sure.
Well, very good. Well, Brad, it's good to catch up with you again. Like I said, that day on Hartwell is one of the best days I've ever had, just from – you know, the feeling I had going into the day, not knowing how to take fishing with the reigning Forestwood Cup guy. And, it, you know, we fish deep, we fish shallow, we listen to tunes on the iPod. There was that unfortunate trout setting incident I had with that fish on the bed, which is just makes me laugh every time I think about it. But I really enjoyed the day. Thanks for letting me be with you. Look forward to seeing you at the Cup here in just a couple of days now.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to getting down there and seeing what's happening, trying to defend my title, see if we can't be the first person to win, too.
First person to win, too. Could be Brad Knight. Thanks for coming on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Look forward to catching up to you soon.
Thanks, Roger.
Yep. See ya. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It is the FLW preview. The cup is here. It's not here, but it's here in time. It's over in Huntsville, Alabama. I'll be there. And I hope you enjoyed listening. Not only your local FLW pro who will be fishing this year, but Brad Knight. Brad's an incredibly nice guy, and we did. We had a ball. We were, like I said in the interview, we were riding around in the boat, and He's really the first one that wanted me to drive his boat for him. I mean, I've backed a bunch of guys down and loaded a bunch of those FLW guys and BASS guys during the tournaments and other times during the year when I've been with them. But got in with Brad and I said, I'll be glad to back you down. He goes, oh, no, you take the boat. And I'm like, no, really, I'll take the truck. He goes, no, take the boat. So I got to drive Brad Knight's boat around Lake Hartwell for a little bit, which was kind of nice and a little unfamiliar. You know, hot foots and all that weren't around much when I was fishing a lot of bass tournaments. So it was kind of a neat thing. But I hope you enjoyed listening to him. He's a really nice guy. And the trout setting incident was, here's the brunt of that one. I had a fish on the bed. Or he had a fish on the bed, and he didn't know how big it was. And we kind of got into a little discussion on how big the fish was, and he said, well, catch it. And I said, okay. And he goes, and I started to pull out something. He goes, no, use a drop shot. And for those of you who don't know what a drop shot is, it's a little weight that you tie on the end of your line, and your hook and your little finesse worm, 4-inch worm, or whatever you want to use, is about 10, 12 inches up the line. So it suspends above the bottom, and you normally fish it straight down on structure out in deep water, whatever. So anyway, using a spinning reel, I flipped this drop shot up onto the bed. and before I could do anything, there's a pink drop shot worm. That bass nailed that drop shot. And so I'm sitting here with one hand on the rod, and the other hand is going to close the bail. Because one way to keep wind knots from a spinning reel is to close the bail with your hand, not with the handle. And it prevents line twist. So anyway, I'm going to close the bail. The bass has already got the worm in his mouth and it's taken off. And so I kind of went back to my fly fishing roots and I grabbed the line in my left hand and the rod in my right hand and tried a fly rod strip set on a trout. And it was ugly. It was ugly. well, we laughed about it and had a good time. Really nice guy. I said, talked about Pokemon Go and all, and really, I think if you're going to get outside, leave the technology at home. I really do. I do it when I deer hunt. I don't have it on normally. Every once in a while, I'll have to answer a text or something, but I leave it out. And I think I've done this before on this show. 10 ways to get your kids out in nature and why it matters. And it's an article, 2008 Audubon Medal recipient, author of Last Child in the Woods, Richard Louvre. Kids today are becoming more and more removed from nature at the expense of their own psychological and physical well-being. It's a good book. I haven't read it, but it talks about, nature as a treatment for a lot of these ADHD, depression, busy life that we get, and here it says, it turns out being in nature is not the tree-hugging hype of the past. And he goes through a few things. And for your parents that are looking for ways to get your kids out, you think that, you know, this Pokemon Go, getting them outside is great. And I agree, getting them outside is an exercise and being a family. So, but you can do all of that without a video game or an app on your phone. And his 10 points are real simple. Inspire curiosity by being curious yourself. Even if you know what's going on, be interested. Get the kid involved. If it's something you don't know, pick something you don't know, and both of you explore it and learn together. You know, be open to a mutual venture and allow your curious inner child to come out while you explore nature with your children. 2, simply be in nature with no other distractions. This is my main one. Forget teaching moments. Just show up and observe. Find a spot near a pond or a creek and encourage your child to wait and observe. If you're still and quiet, you never know what you're going to see. Frogs, birds, squirrels, deer. You know, let the kid lead. Let them dig. Let them get dirty. Early exposure in nature is less about learning facts and more about the senses and joy. Limit electronic devices while commuting. You know, if you're driving around town, there's no reason to have the video player. In our family, if the trip was under 3 hours, kids couldn't watch a movie. And sometimes we fudged on the 2-hour limit. But in those hours, you know, you teach them to look and be aware of what's around them and the sky. Riding down the road, have you ever tried to look into the woods as you're going 70 miles an hour on the interstate? It's kind of hard, but there's a trick to it. You can learn how to look past the first line of woods. But that's another one of my great things. forget the interstates, get on the back roads. There is so much more to see on the back roads of South Carolina than you will ever see driving I-85, I-26, I-95. It may take a little longer. Hey, leave a little earlier. But those, the back roads in South Carolina are where the beauty is. And there's so much more for those kids to see. And after a while, they won't want to watch those movies going down the road because there is a lot outside the car. Seek out natural untouched spaces and go to, back to them often. You know, find a place where it's yours, so to speak. Keep it clean, you know, undisturbed. Make time for unstructured outdoor play. Most children between ages of 8 and 18 are spending at least 6.5 hours a day plugged in electronically. That's 45 hours a week. I love this one. Try skipping organized sports for a season and use that time to go outside and be in nature with your child. 6, stop thinking about nature time as leisure time. 7, read about nature with your child. Adventures of Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, Little House on the Prairie, Jungle Book. Some good ones. Plant a small garden. That's not the right time now. But, you know, hey, not only do you teach your kids how to be outside and get dirty, you get something for it. You know, green beans, corn, okra, whatever. Look at the stars. You got the Perseid meteor showers coming up in August. Perfect time for you to start looking at the stars. Look up. Some of the best things I've ever done has been before daylight and after dark, looking up. Get organized. You know, keep a log. Invest your kids in the outdoors, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And we can do it without an app and a game that's really, don't get me started. Anyway, I hope you will. With fall coming on, it's time to make those plans to get outdoors. You know, the weather's going to be nice. The leaves are going to be changing. Fishing's going to be getting better. Deer season's coming in. You know, I encourage you. Make the time to get out there. When you can, take those back roads. I'm telling you, there's a world of learning out there on the back road in South Carolina. And as always, don't forget that camera. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you tune in again next week. And in the meantime, be careful. We'll see you back here on Woods and Water, South Carolina.